and right here. Dave Cole, our general manager, was telling me the other – actually, this is probably more than a week ago when some of this was still a bit up in the air. But he was saying this is going to be the biggest story in southeastern Wisconsin since the closing of the car plant. I mean, particularly on an economic front, no single event has been this big. And maybe in the history of the state, there's never been a single event as potentially transformative as this.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hearing as well. Our largest single capital foreign investment in the history of Wisconsin and potentially the largest in the history of the United States. So this is a major commitment by Foxconn to not only invest in the United States, but invest right here in southeast Wisconsin. And I think it certainly poses some challenges, but what an opportunity. I mean, it's so unique and so special. It will not only help drive the way we think about the jobs in our area, but I think it will begin to build a lot of bridges between our communities, whether they're local here in Racine and Kenosha or way beyond into Chicago, Milwaukee markets. And, you know, it has an impact that ripples throughout the entire nation.
Mm-hmm. President Albrecht, I really am curious to know. I think a lot of people are curious to know what kind of conversations have occurred between Gateway Technical College and any of the powers that be discussing this possibility. I suspect there's a limit to what you can tell us, but I hope you can at least give us a general sense of how many and what kind of conversations have occurred and between whom and what kind of things have been talked about.
Sure. It's getting a little easier to talk about it because in the beginning, of course, there's an awful lot of confidentiality, and there still is. So, you know, there are many decisions that need to be made, and you wouldn't want to derail any of those great dialogues that are going on. A lot of relationships are being built. But a little over 2 months ago, we did have the opportunity to host a delegation from Taiwan at our S.C. Johnson iMed Center and began the discussion around what technology applications we already had and in place and training programs like engineering and IT and mechatronics and systems automation and computer numerical control.
And can I just ask, did you know at the time what that was about? I mean, before they arrived, did you even then have a sense of what this visit was about?
We had a pretty good idea. We didn't know exactly what the anticipated magnitude of the project was, but we knew it was called Flying Eagle, and we knew that there were folks looking at some investments in our region. And we do this quite often, actually. We work closely with Racine County Economic Development Corporation and Kenosha Business Alliance, CABA. And as new companies move to our area, Gateway is invited to those meetings to think and talk about what services we already provide. More importantly, what do we have to look forward to in the future? You might recall 2 months ago we were working with Haribo. They announced they were moving to our region, so that was an important dialogue to think about mechatronics. Ironically, Foxconn is also the same industry platform around mechatronics, and so we're working to ramp up our programs. But to get back to that visit, I mean, that really helped set the stage for me thinking about how important it was that we really start to look at the cooperative agreements that we have with our university partners, with our K-12 partners, and building a talent pipeline for thousands of people, not hundreds, but thousands. And while we were accustomed over the years to be able to adapt to economic changes and bringing in hundreds of students, we're not quite familiar with bringing in thousands. So we're working very diligently to ramp up our services and make sure that we're ready when Foxconn is ready.
Right. I have to say, this is going to be kind of a strange thing to admit, but as I've been watching different things on television, some of the faces I've seen on the screen regarding the training of all these workers have been the faces of someone from MATC or from Herzing or from Marquette. And I keep thinking about, well, what about Gateway? Because obviously that's the school I care about the most and know about the most of these kind of schools we're talking about. Does this shape up to be kind of a competitive situation in terms of Gateway versus MATC versus other potential schools who could play a really important role in this? And how is that likely to shape out?
Yeah, I don't think it's I wouldn't use the word competitive. I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for everyone to benefit. I mean, the region, this whole effort being coined now as Wisconn Valley is much more than any single community could possibly manage. You're talking about, you know, 10,000 plus employees in the factory, but then you're also looking at another 20 to 30,000 employees that are going to be needed to support all the supply chain companies and all of the, you know, the new services that are going to be required. So I think there's opportunity for all of us. And in the current structure of our educational systems, I mean, you'd have to double the size of any single campus in order to even begin to compare to this. So it's better to leverage the resources of a Waukesha County Tech, a Milwaukee Area Tech, or Blackhawk. And we've all met already all the presidents, and we are we're working very diligently to find out how we can leverage the faculty that we have and the technology and equipment that's in our labs already, and see if we can't find ways to streamline the process, shorten programs. In fact, we'll be meeting with the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee to take a look at some new engineering opportunities that could be brought to our district down here. So, you know, while we hear different quotes and comments from other educational institutions, I don't see that as a negative. I think it's very important to recognize that education and training is key to these new jobs. So these are not the kind of jobs that maybe you might have gotten 40 years ago right off the streets. These are technology-driven, computer-literate employees with an advanced interest in innovation and technology, because what they build today is not what they're going to build 5 years from now. So we've got to be able to be thinking about lifelong learning, and it's going to take a lot of our efforts to help educate our entire citizenry on what the future is. So you're talking 7,000 contract workers in order to build a facility. Then you have to maintain the facility. Then you have all the infrastructure that goes around supporting it, housing developments, and there's so many elements that surround the idea of a Foxconn campus that the whole region's going to benefit.
Right, absolutely. And, of course, on the one hand, I'm watching, for instance, a newscast from Milwaukee, and it only makes sense that they would pick up the phone and call MATC or Marquette. But, in fact, this is going to happen, it looks like, right here. I mean, so in a sense, this will be on the home turf of Gateway Technical College. But beyond that, of course, this speaks exactly to some of the most exciting innovations that Gateway has already developed. I mean, this is right on the bullseye in terms of what this school has stood for now for the,
for
the last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've actually shared that in the meetings last night in Milwaukee. I said, they asked if we're prepared. I said, we've been preparing for over 100 years, right? We were prepared in 1911 when there was a major economic shift in this region, and we put programs together to support a transition to the automotive industry and developing mechatronics and automation as we moved through the 80s and 90s. And here we are today in 2017 looking at a highly integrated technological system where IT is integrated with manufacturing, and we call it smart technology. We're probably all familiar with the things that we like on our phones where you can control your temperature at your home with an app, and that's the interoperability. Those are the driverless cars. That's how things work today. And many people call it the Internet of Things. And so while we have programs that are positioned for that, this really sets our eyes on the future. And I saw yesterday in Milwaukee what some of the future might look like when you have robots that are taking care of security systems, and that was really impressive to see. And, you know, the liquid crystal glassware that they're using to do eye surgery, and it was absolutely remarkable. And I know our students and I know our employers in this area are ready for that, but this puts a magnitude on it that says not only do you have to be ready, we need to be able to run with this right now and start to really get into the R&D and think about the types of material science programs, chemical engineering programs, IT manufacturing programs, and robotics programs. And so it will set the stage for a lot of growth for Gateway and all the other colleges in the area.
Right. What is your best understanding of the timeline that they are at least vaguely thinking about?
Yeah, I'm telling our team to make every decision using the model of halftime. So that means that if you had a meeting that was going to last an hour, make a decision in 30 minutes. So they're on a fast track here.
Okay.
We're ramping up. In fact, last night we posted on our website an introduction to some new careers at Gateway, and we're encouraging people to take a look at it. Our classes are open for enrollment right now, and I remind all of our teams that, you know, it's a 24-month window in order to build a facility like this, which means that's a two-year degree. If you start today, you'll be ready, right? So don't wait until everything is done and then decide, I think I might want to apply. Mm. Now is the time to get ready. Upgrade your skills, build talent pipelines, work at the high school and middle schools to help encourage kids to go into these types of careers. This is really grounded on STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math, and puts a real strong focus on our region to be able to transform our educational system to deliver that. So for me, the timing is now. We're not going to wait. And hopefully for many that are interested in these types of careers, they'll take a good hard look at Gateway.
Right. One of the things that I think we were hoping for yesterday was some announcement to be made in terms of the location of where this exactly was going to be built. And maybe that was naive, and maybe that's just our impatience, but I know a lot of people are really very, very curious about that for a whole lot of different reasons. My understanding is no exact location has yet been chosen, and I want to ask you first if that's your understanding also. And I also wonder if you could just take us inside the process of what kind of things are looked at, what kind of things need to be considered in order for the site for this gigantic plant to be ultimately chosen.
Absolutely, and you're absolutely correct. A site has not been disclosed. I don't even know that it's been selected finally. In fact, it might be multiple sites. You know, there's so much conversation going on. But I think anytime you put together an economic development proposal like this, one of the things that really overlays it is just the size again. You go back to that magnitude of the facility itself and all the supporting systems. But that means you need to have property. And so we're not talking about hundreds of acres. We're talking about thousands of acres. And so it's a big region that will be impacted by this. And that includes things like services that go out there, water, sewer services. You heard the mayor of Milwaukee yesterday talk about the wonderful Great Lake that we have and how water's becoming the economic driver, and it certainly is in this industry as well as many others. So you got to have water, sewer, electrical, power grids. You know, this technology is really a high sophisticated technology where little things like vibrations make a difference. So you've got to try and find where roads are located and where train tracks are located and airports are located and all the things that we kind of take for granted as we drive around our community. Those have an impact on how a facility can operate and transportation, logistics of employees. So it's not a couple of people going to work. It's thousands going to work every day. And how do you maintain that flow of traffic? And, you know, these are the types of operations that run 24/7. So you've got to make sure that you have backup systems to keep them all going and that there's a way that you can not only fit within the context of the scope of the project, but also fit within the community in which you reside. So, you know, you can't let one company take over the entire identity of a community. So it's downtown areas, it's outlying areas, it's rural areas, it's urban areas, and there's just a lot of dialogue. Maybe some of it's because many of them have different jurisdictions. So you've got municipality, townships, cities, and everybody, you know, has a governance model, and all those governance models need to come together. So it takes time, and right. I think that's what they're working through.
Is it possible that this matter could derail the project? And I guess that was one thing I wanted to ask you too. As has been reported, there have been a couple of instances with much, much smaller projects that ultimately did not come to fruition. Do you see any possibility here that something like not being able to secure the right location, is it conceivable that this project could be derailed? In fact, not come to pass?
Well, you know, I think it's always conceivable. You know, you never know exactly what's going to happen the next day. But this is the way I explained it to our team. When the president of the United States announced it at the White House, the governor, the speaker, everybody there, and the CEO and owner of the company is there, it's like jumping into the deep end. We're in. We're swimming a little bit to try to make sure, but we're in, and we're going to make sure that it works. And I think our communities, that everyone that I've talked to in our communities, they're really excited about this, and we'll find a way to make it work. And we want it to work because the folks that I've met from Foxconn are just terrific people with great members of our community. And like I said, they'll help us grow with them. So this isn't something that they're expecting, you know, Racine or Kenosha or Milwaukee or Wisconsin to automatically change and adapt to their models. This is a growing partnership, and I think it's, you know, growing pains in any organization are tough, but this one, the statement and has been made all the way from the President of the United States to the CEO of the company, and Governor Walker's got some major investments that he's proposing for the state of Wisconsin that the legislature will take under consideration. So a $3 billion investment by the state is not anything to take lightly, so we're going to try to make it happen.
Let me just ask you a couple other real quick things. In terms of Gateway, you just talked about how we don't want a company to come in and just kind of swamp the community and as though nothing else matters.
Right.
I mean, a lot of things that are already in place really matter. Even for a place like Gateway, do you worry at all about how the wonderful plethora of different offerings that Gateway offers and that are valued, how tricky is it going to be to continue to offer everything else that has nothing to at least directly to do with this new project of Foxconn? Do you think very much about what that juggling act is going to mean?
There's a lot of balancing that needs to happen, and but I look at it like this. So Foxconn, it's a large organization, but it is like its own community. So it will need a fire department. It'll need security systems. It'll need health care. It'll need IT systems. So all of the programs that we offer have a chance to benefit from it. While we will focus on manufacturing and high-skilled careers in those areas, it's not to say that those 10,000 people aren't going to need nurses and dentists and doctors and all that sort of. So,
well, and landscaping and
landscaping, horticulture,
and
aviation,
and
transportation, logistics. They're going to need cars, all those things. So for me, it's really about how do we make sure that everyone knows they're a part of this solution, and the college will grow incrementally as a result.
I know you and Gateway also stand for environmental sustainability. Are there concerns we need to be really worried about in terms of the environmental impact that this has? And what do you know about Foxconn and its history of being attentive to environmental concerns?
Yeah, and I know, you know, if you Google it right now, you'll get a lot of different perspectives on Foxconn. And I think one of the things to remember is that whether it's Foxconn or any other company moving to our region, there are federal laws, state laws, local laws, and jurisdictions that follow all of that. And I think most companies that I've worked with anyways have really wanted to become a part of the community and not kind of separate themselves and say, I don't have to follow the rules. So our intention is to make sure that we support Foxconn in the development of that cultural transition that, of course, they will make as well. A company that's putting $10 billion into this facility, I don't think is going to cut corners. I don't think they're going to try to find a cheap way out, right? They're going to make sure that water's protected. They're going to make sure that their products are clean. It has to be. It's a clean working environment. So they know the importance of air quality. And I think this gives us a chance to demonstrate to the nation and to the world that manufacturing can be done in a really efficient and effective way and still protect our environment. So I think it's going to be a showcase facility.
Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you slipping this into a very, very busy schedule, and we know over the next months and years there's going to be all kinds of exciting updates that we'll get from you, and we look forward to being part of this exciting story. Thank you for being part of the morning show
today.
You're
very welcome. It's my pleasure. Just glad to be a part of Wisconn Valley.
Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College.
You've been listening to morning show host Greg Berg talking to Dr. Albrecht, president of Gateway Technical College, about the impact of Foxconn's decision on Gateway Technical College. The interview originally aired Friday morning on the morning show. Now we have some comments from Art Sear, the director of the Clausen Center for World Business, and he spoke with Greg on the morning show on Thursday.
First of all, I think you've touched on this before when we've talked about Foxconn on one previous occasion, but the word if is important when we talk about if this comes to fruition. I believe you were telling us even last time that Foxconn has a little bit of a record of not necessarily always following through on announced projects. I mean, a couple of different potential projects here in the United States have in fact not come true, or facilities in fact ended up not being built. Does this feel different than that to you? Does this feel like something that is more likely to, in fact, come to fruition?
Yes. Terry Goh, the founder and brilliant entrepreneur that has created this enormous and enormously successful corporation, like a lot of entrepreneurs, he can't sit still, and he's traveling constantly. And again, that's essential for him, but he's made multiple stops in the U.S., Pennsylvania seems to be the one that had the most serious interchange with him and his associates, and that did not pan out. And there were a lot of complaints that they had been led down a primrose path, and then for whatever reason, the company pulled the plug. This seems different. The President of the United States was not involved in previous announcements. Pennsylvania felt confident enough that they went public with the news that Foxconn was going to relocate there. The amount, the sweetener involved financially, the money and guarantees being provided by the state of Wisconsin appear to be quite substantial, and there's been nothing like that before. It's so public, and they've gone so far down the road together, I'm confident this will work. I'm a professor, not a businessman. Always keep that in mind.
Right, right.
Also, Foxconn has gotten some bad news in has had a bad press for all their commercial and financial success. And they would pay a price, I think, if they pulled the plug on this one. Mm-hmm. Workers' suicides, dreadful working conditions, the kind of things that are absolutely not going to happen in the United States are still pretty commonplace in lots of the rest of the world, including China. And they have a strong incentive to create some good news and have the president praising them. And good press is particularly important for this corporation.
Right. In the NPR story that aired this morning, they actually had several different stories and several different
right. It's analysts. Good coverage. You and yeah. your colleagues should be congratulated. Very right. serious reporting.
Yeah. One of the interesting points that was made, I thought, is the fact that, in a sense, we as citizens are the losers, in one respect at least, because this scenario is set up in what amounts to a bidding war between various states here in America, mm-hmm. Ponying up with various packages of offers of subsidies for a company like Foxconn, and that because we are all competing for a plum like this, that the amount of the subsidies being offered escalates.
Right.
And of course, every dollar that we are ponying up in a subsidy, in a sense, is a dollar that Foxconn isn't themselves spending.
Yeah.
And so the longer that bidding war goes on, the less and less attractive this deal becomes from our point of view, as Americans collectively, except if the deal in fact happens. Mm-hmm. And of course that feels like a very delicate balancing act, but how far do we go with subsidies offered before at some point this becomes a deal that isn't a good deal after all?
Well, Greg, that is called the real world, isn't it? And it's particularly important that academics, including academic administrators, keep that in mind. You can't be too rigid, and you can't go around slapping people in the face as your approach to management. In the business world, you don't last long if you do that. There are some very savvy people on both sides. The very good article in the Kenosha News yesterday has some very good hard information on this. Tom Still, the president of the Wisconsin Technology Council, based in Madison, I thought had some very cogent statements to make about this. It depends on a calculation of whether this will pay off for you eventually or not. Big money is involved, but high-tech and computer. High-tech and the computer dimension of the economy, the global economy, is particularly important and particularly promising. And Foxconn does not have, again, for the reasons I just mentioned, they don't have any reason at all to take Wisconsin for a ride or appear to be taking advantage of either the state or federal government. Mm. So I'm pretty optimistic, given that it's gone this far.
Well, that it'll happen.
Again, I'm a professor, not a businessman. I sit in that academic hothouse where people don't always negotiate very well or handle things very well.
Right.
I learned that firsthand.
Sure. But for instance, if the state of Wisconsin over the course of 15 years ponies up $3 billion in subsidies, which is, you know, unprecedented. I mean, many times more than any subsidy ever offered before, and we get 13,000 jobs, which is sort of the top figure mm-hmm. promised. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did the math. I didn't, but that works out to $231,000 per job that we're the state of Wisconsin is, in a sense, paying out that amount of money per job.
Yeah.
I mean, jobs that are going to pay on an average somewhere in the mid-50s. So just at a glance, you know, an amateur looking at those numbers, it doesn't seem like it makes sense.
I don't want to overwork the business front, but there really are two cultures involved in academia and in government and in the nonprofit world generally, but especially in academia. The focus is on a solid, a static situation, a static pie that doesn't expand but may contract. Mm. Oh, my God, Professor so-and-so is getting more money. That means I'm going to get less. My budget's going to be cut. Or, oh, my God, the spending. Wow. A very contrary experience over many years in dealing with the business world is on the income side. The focus is on the income side. What are you producing? What are you producing for the institution? What's coming in terms of financial and other benefit? Hmm. There are not a lot of jobs involved in manufacturing generally. High tech is expanding worldwide, but like other sectors in manufacturing, it involves a tremendous amount and a growing amount of automation. You've got to look at what's this likely to produce in terms of gross and also net income. And I think that's important to focus on, and there we don't know for sure. But I did do some research after I got your email about discussing Foxconn last evening. And one particularly important point that professors, business professors make, especially, is that there's a dynamic relationship between location of manufacturing and production and technological innovation. In 2009, the Harvard Business Review produced and published an influential article by Gary Pisano and Willie Shi, another one of these people from China who seem to be everywhere sometimes, that there is a demonstrable and measurable, always important, expansion of technological innovation when you have production facilities on sites. So beyond the thousands of jobs, you should look to what this promises in terms of income for the company and the region and our country, and also the likelihood of technological innovation. I don't know, but it's reasonable to speculate that one reason why this area is so desirable for Foxconn and other companies is the powerhouse of Madison and the University of Wisconsin generally, and other institutions, including Carthage College, but in terms of very large scale, right, applied, as well as basic research. Business investment, commercial investment in production has all kinds of ancillary benefits.
Right. And by the way, as we're
is
mentioning...
Is that a clear point?
Yeah.
Because I don't fully understand it myself, but I know it's important.
Right, right. Well, and in mentioning institutions of higher learning, my suspicion is, and have had some hints to this effect, the fact that that there is an institution like Gateway here in the area,
yes,
that could be a superb vehicle in terms of trying to train the workforce needed for an operation as large as this, which is no small matter.
Yeah.
In fact, I should think that is one very significant consideration when a facility this large is being considered or proposed, is where are the thousands and thousands of skilled workers going to come,
yeah,
who are going to work in this gigantic factory?
Yes, indeed. And technological training, it's why education at all levels is important, but especially the kind of education you find at a place like Gateway. Why that dimension is so important. There are always tech jobs available, truck maintenance, healthcare, and others, even during the recent severe recession. But finding people that you can hire is a regular business lament, understandably, and that'll be a major challenge, especially because unemployment is low, under 5%, around 4%. In Racine, traditionally, as you know, a high unemployment, relatively high unemployment area in this region, as well as Kenosha and Walworth. So it'll be a challenge, but that's why people go into the business world. There is this potential investment, and very important one in Wisconsin, is part of a more general trend of manufacturing jobs returning to the United States, because you're going to be close to your you're going to be close to your customers, you're going to be close to distribution.
Hmm. That that answers what was my next question, which was why
I'm getting better at this.
Right. Well, why in the world would Foxconn want to build a gigantic factory here if our labor costs are so much higher than they are in, you know, just about any other place on the planet? It must
higher than they are in developing countries. Our labor costs are not that high compared to Europe,
hmm,
and other major industrial nations.
Right.
Our labor costs are not as high as they are in Japan.
Right. But for instance, why aren't they just building another factory in China or India or someplace where they wouldn't need to pay their workers nearly as much as they'll pay them here? But I think you already touched on maybe at least part of what that incentive might be.
Yes, again, these are automated, increasingly automated. Manufacturing generally is increasingly automated, and high-tech sectors in particular, along with very basic manufacturing of things like steel, are particularly automated. Jobs is an important consideration, a very human one, and should be central. And in this country, I'm very glad that traditionally it is in terms of public debate and government. But there is more than just jobs involved. Half the truck traffic through North America goes through our immediate region. It's one reason why truck maintenance and roads are so important. Anybody who drives spends time waiting at railroad crossings. It's quite clear now why Warren Buffett targeted railroads about a decade ago for very, very heavy duty, much publicized investment. Not much in the news, but extremely important. There are enormous, and I mean enormous, rail freight yards still expanding, very substantial already, southwest of the city of Chicago. This trend, we're ideally positioned for all the problems in the traditional industrial heartland. We're very well positioned to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And I think Foxconn is here for the same reason. Amazon is here with a building that looks like it rivals the Pentagon to me, mm-hmm. and Uline, and a growing array of others. Pay attention to CABA, the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. Todd Battle and colleagues do a great job of attracting business here and deserve a lot of credit, which I think they don't always receive. But they're also a catalyst for what is a kind of broad natural trend of recovery. Mm-hmm. There's also political considerations involved. I think it's reasonable to think that one factor is a very high-profile, positive, important piece of news from a company that's gotten a fair amount of bad press.
Hmm. So that's in their interest in terms of their burnishing their own,
of course,
PR profile.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right, and of course that was another story on NPR this morning that I thought was quite intriguing. There are ways in which we do not make sense as the target for such a facility to be built, that there would be cheaper labor down south, there would be more expertise out towards the West Coast. But they didn't touch on the matter that you were talking about, just the grimy business of transporting goods.
You're underscoring, again, the importance of transportation outside of the federal U.S. highway system, this phenomenal network for which Dwight Eisenhower deserves a lot of credit, which that should be acknowledged more often, in my biased opinion. You don't have the same kind of infrastructure in the South, even around Atlanta. Dating from the Civil War, one of the things that another presidential genius saw immediately, Abraham Lincoln, was the extraordinary potential and importance of the railroads. The North had the infrastructure. Even in the early 1860s, the South had almost nothing. And Northern rail lines radiated east to west. Southern rail line, in the developing Northern capitalist system, Southern rail lines tended to be like stars radiating from major metropolises, especially Atlanta, Georgia, but they didn't have anything like the scale that the North had.
And that's
only more true today. That's only more
so
low labor
still
cost.
So they're still at a disadvantage in that respect.
And others, yeah.
Interesting.
Constantly touting Republicans who are and business people down there who are constantly touting the fact that we have right to work. You know, we're basically hostile to unions. Come and invest with us. There are lots of other things besides whether you have a labor union in place or not.
Interesting.
Well, I'm glad it's interesting.
So one of the big questions, of course, is exactly where this is going to land. And one of the possibilities is pretty much right in my backyard, very, very close to where we live on the south side of Racine. But that's one of a number of different potential spots. I read in one story that President Trump, while flying in to speak at Snap-on Tools a few months ago, saw this huge empty area right in the middle of Kenosha, of course, where the car plant used to be, and he was heard to remark, you know, something needs to go in there, something needs to be built, and who knows, maybe that'll be where Foxconn goes. But give us some sense. Again, you're a professor, not a businessman. Give us some sense of what a company thinks about in making first the big decision of should we come to America, should we come to Wisconsin, and then even within Wisconsin, where should we go? Where should we put this? I mean, what likely are the most important considerations when it comes to a really significant decision like that?
Well, you're right. I'm not a business person, and I'm not even a business school professor. I'm very glad to be working at the Clausen Center for World Business, and we have a very powerful business major and a very popular one at Carthage, and we're instituting a new graduate degree, which, thanks to Jennifer Madden, is in business, is doing quite well initially. I'm in the political science department. We do have the rule of law. We do have great stability, despite all the scary news, which isn't always fake, but is often exaggerated. We are a very stable, law-abiding environment, which means contracts, compared to other parts of the world, including China today, contracts will be respected. Corruption is present. Crime is present, but not like other places in the world. It's why we have been increasingly, and I believe will continue to be, a tremendous base for investment. A tremendous base for investment. There's tremendous emphasis. The president used it very effectively and successfully in the 2016 presidential campaign. Tremendous emphasis on other countries taking advantage of us, on because of their bad practices and reflecting our good guy status, they're taking advantage of us. In point of fact, the picture is a good deal more complicated than that. Jeremy Haft, there's a very good annual book published by the Foreign Policy Association called Great Decisions. Jeremy Haft has a very, very, an entrepreneur as well as adjunct professor at Georgetown University, a chapter on trade and globalization. Gross domestic product has been used since the Great Depression. The Commerce Department and the Roosevelt administration were desperate to get some numbers concerning how bad things were and whether we were improving. Gross domestic product is what is spent in the economy, what you bring in, and what you sell in terms of exports, minus what you bring in in terms of exports, and what you minus what, I'm obviously not a business professor, what you spend in terms of imports. It's a figure that is increasingly removed from reality in the global economy. What he looks at instead, and others, including the Federal Reserve Board, do this, is household wealth, what we own, not an income and expenses statement, but a balance sheet, what we own compared to what we owe. And when you look at that, according to these numbers, we have net assets of something like $90 trillion. China, whose economy is supposed to be larger than ours, and by some measures is in terms of gross manufacturing jobs, they are still in the neighborhood of around $20 trillion. And we're expanding. A stable, efficient environment, very good infrastructure, and the rule of law, I think, are all important in this. So those are the other things that one can assume savvy business people are looking at.
Right. And, of course, that's exactly the kind of relatively intangible matter that not only doesn't make the headlines, but scarcely gets mentioned at all, especially in the mainstream media.
Right.
But
well, that's why we're here, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Did you want to talk about some other parts of the world and other developments?
Well, in just a moment.
Okay.
So this is something that, as you were saying, will presumably move forward. And of course, subsidies this high need to be passed by our state legislature. I would assume. So you're not a business professor, but you are a political science professor.
Mm-hmm.
Can you conceive of a scenario in which this wouldn't move forward politically, or would it be, in a sense, political suicide for anybody to raise serious objections to something like this?
I think it'll probably pass. Keep in mind, I didn't think Donald Trump could get nominated or elected. So take my statements of any kind for make your own judgment. The governor has had some problems, especially regarding highways, with his own party. But the Republicans do have a majority. They tend to be more in favor of freer trade and more in favor of facilitating business activity and business investment. I'd be surprised if there were a big controversy in the legislature. Governor Walker has played his cards very close to his vest until yesterday, I believe, and I don't think he would be willing to go public if this didn't look pretty good.
Right.
He hasn't had an easy time, and Lyndon Johnson used to say that being an executive elected office is like being a ship, and a ship collects barnacles. And over time, you're going to get more and more barnacles. This was while he was going down during a really terrible time.
Right.
Yeah, and he was remarkably perceptive and cogent for such a flawed man, let me say.
Here's the last thing, and this steps a little bit away from Foxconn to something more general. Part of President Trump's most fervent base seems to be a kind of conservative that is extremely wary of globalism. And you were just really kind of touching on this, but I want you to say a word about the fear that a fair number of Americans have with this notion of globalism, and a fear of the United States somehow getting kind of swallowed up and sort of, in a sense, maybe losing its identity and losing its sovereignty. In this global world where we're all connected to the point where after a while, I mean, borders become less meaningful and this and that. I mean, part of what apparently got Mr. Trump elected president was in a sense speaking to this fear.
Absolutely.
But you as are one of the most eloquent champions I know of of globalism. So I just want you to say a word about that.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a grain of truth in that fear of globalism?
Yes.
And what do we do with that? I mean, is globalism something that should be curbed, curtailed, reversed, or is that not even possible and or desirable?
I don't think it's possible, actually. The enormous force and power of global economic trends, driven by very powerful corporations, but also by all kinds of organizations and businesses, large and small, that find it profitable, I don't think is stoppable. It's one reason why Brexit is not as controversial among people in political circles, but the British voted very narrowly in favor of withdrawal. It was not a mass populist movement there. And it isn't here. I don't think it's stoppable, but I think it's a leadership question for politicians and politicians in this country. The Washington establishment is the obvious target, but not them alone. Trump very brilliantly exploited this hostility and anxiety, which is why the politicians are emphasizing jobs. You and I are talking about ancillary technological benefits. Ancillary positive aspects of an investment in Wisconsin beyond jobs. But you're right. Trump appeals to tens of millions of our fellow Americans whose votes are as valuable as ours, are as important as ours. That's the genius of our system. And clearly, not only in this country, but in other countries, including Europe, including the Philippines, a lot of people are discontented by the tremendous, tumultuous change that capitalism brings in global terms.
Isn't this...
And it's a test of political leaders, but it's why the politicians are emphasizing jobs.
Right.
It's why President Trump emphasized jobs. Part of his theme was bad foreigners are taking advantage of us good guy Americans, and I'm not exaggerating in his case, but another part is we're going to bring jobs back here. And he and Terry Goh come together in the sense that they're both looking for political and public relations advantage as well as business profits for Foxconn and for an income for our country. But it's a very good deal in the sense that it's the other part of President Trump's campaign theme. We're going to bring jobs back to America.
Right. I guess I'm just underscoring the irony of it.
Of course.
Because, you know, you're speaking to the same base that